It's Marketplace Tech for November 14th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Last week, when the country elected Donald Trump to be our next president, voters in several states also passed recreational marijuana initiatives, including Massachusetts, Nevada, Maine, and California. This means a lot of things, but one thing it means is opportunities for the growing number of techie cannabis startups. Some of these cannabis startups come from a California-based incubator called Gateway. Get it? But it's no joke. California officials think the initiative will bring in a cool $1 billion in new annual tax revenue. So Gateway's co-founders expect to be involved in some serious business. Carter Laren is one of them. Hi, Carter. Thanks for chatting.
Thanks for having me.
Why do you think there's potential for a lot of growth in cannabis-focused tech startups?
As you may know, cannabis is the fastest growing industry in the U.S. As of Tuesday, the market size basically doubled overnight for cannabis. And because it's been underground for so long, and there was a black market and then kind of a gray market, a lot of the typical business sophistication and business tools surrounding the industry that you would expect from an industry aren't there.
Haven't been built yet.
Yeah. And as these businesses come into the light, suddenly there's opportunity for people to start providing some of the tools and equipment needed to efficiently operate a business.
Right. So what are the tools and the equipment needed?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the obvious things is basically inventory management and control and regulation compliance. You'll have people who build seed-to-sale tracking systems, for example. There's also a lot of agricultural technology that can be developed. If you look at the margins for cannabis as compared to other agricultural products, it's literally orders of magnitude higher. And so I think what you'll see is some really cool agricultural technology come out of the cannabis industry, and once it's developed in the cannabis industry, I think it will be applicable to other agricultural commodities.
Are VCs really buying into this right now?
Yes. I mean, I think a lot of people were sitting on the sidelines waiting until Tuesday to see which way the tide was going to flow.
What do you think the Trump administration means for this industry?
I don't actually think it's really going to change at the federal level in the short term. Okay. I don't expect him to do anything great, but I don't expect him to really change anything. I think it's going to be status quo.
Carter Laren is co-founder of the Cannabis Business and Startup Incubator. Carter, thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Hear that? It's the sound of a blockbuster that had almost no words in it. WALL-E, the Pixar movie from 2008 about a lonely robot. Pixar is now owned by Disney, which announced earnings a few days ago with a pretty positive outlook for the near future. It was not always so for Pixar, though, a struggling tech firm owned by Steve Jobs. A new book detailing the company's rise to success is out from Pixar's former CFO, Lawrence Levy. Title, To Pixar and Beyond, My Unlikely Journey with Steve Jobs to Make Entertainment History. Lawrence, thanks for coming by. 3D animation became a great venue for filmmakers, but that wasn't really Steve Jobs' original plan.
Not at all. I think Pixar was bought to be a technology company, a graphics company. And in the first years, the animation was a way to test out the graphics.
Really?
Yeah.
It was like the guinea pig.
It was like the guinea pig. So animation was, you're doing this super high-end 3D graphics, and animation and 3D imagery was the way to test it and see if it would work.
When you first came to Pixar, you were shown a brief and I guess incomplete clip from Toy Story. And you say that you witnessed a level of creative and technical wizardry that you could have never imagined. Tell me about how Pixar got there, how Pixar made this thing.
Pixar innovated on two fronts. On the first was the technology, and it had to create a proprietary animation system in order to give the level of emotionality that it needed to these three-dimensional images that were basically in a computer screen. And at the same time, there was the story. You know, it took years to hone the storytelling capability that Pixar had. John Lasseter used to say, right, great graphics will keep us in our seats for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's story that keeps us in the seats for 90 minutes.
How did having Jobs, this tech guy, as CEO affect Pixar?
keep in mind that for all of Pixar's history until that point, Steve had never worked at Pixar. He had been running Next Computer.
Right.
You can imagine they had this sort of delicate, very familial sort of hugging culture at Pixar, and they sort of lived in fear that what they perceived as this sort of tyrannical Steve Jobs that they read about.
Mm. But he understood creativity. Is that fair to say?
I think he understood creativity on the technical side, like on the software, hardware kind of side, but storytelling creativity, that's something different. And I think that that's something that we both together had to learn.
What did you learn about the way that the company functioned that people should be thinking about when they want to make the next Pixar?
There are always different forces pulling against each other. So creative force, you have the technical force, and you have the business force. Mm. These things don't always align.
And don't so I know it.
What Pixar did brilliantly is first to recognize that those tensions are there and that that's not a bad thing. It's a natural thing. It's a good thing. Mm. But then work on harmonizing those tensions as best you can.
Lawrence Levy, he's the author of To Pixar and Beyond, My Unlikely Journey with Steve Jobs to Make Entertainment History. Lawrence, thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And question, who is your favorite Pixar character? Tough call for me. I'm partial to that baby from The Incredibles. The kid had a lot of natural talents. Tweet me yours and tell me why. I'm at The Brock Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.